Welcome to The Right Now Show. My name is Zach Day, and on the show, we have real, deep, and unfiltered conversations.
Yeah. I thought I was going to die. I thought of one thing, bro. Not the things I did do, but the things I didn't do.
If you love yourself enough, then you're going to call yourself out.
Don't ever, ever, ever let the false sense of fear interfere with your life.
The purpose of this show is to help you gain perspective on life, to help you become more intelligent, and to inspire all the people out there that are complacent with their life right now to get up and actually go for your real dream. I got a question database in here I've been working on, so I'm going to test some of my new questions out on you.
Sure. I love being your rabbit.
Yeah. What's your favorite emotion?
My favorite emotion is excitement and novelty.
Novelty. Is that an emotion? Novelty?
Well, maybe my English can use an expansion. What's an emotion associated with something new and exciting? Excitement is specifically fueled by something new. So variety fueled novelty. I don't know what's the word for emotion for that.
I feel like it'd be like curiosity, joy.
Wow. This I got up at 4:40 in the morning.
Straight from the plane, yes. Podcast.
Yeah.
So, came from the blizzard to get here.
Yeah, feeling like Tom Hanks in the terminal.
Yeah, I feel bad, but how do you pronounce your last name?
Call. Us off.
Call us off.
There you go.
We got Ilya Kolosoff on the podcast today. Ilya is he's an entrepreneur. He's also a coach. I met him through an event called Undisputed Mastery. And what else do you do? What else is interesting about you?
I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh.
I play the accordion. Pretty good at writing poetry.
Yeah.
And...
You sell shoes, right?
Well, yeah, that's my bread and butter. Mm-hmm. I sell ballroom dance shoes. I eat the dance. This is a custom-made dance shoes for ballroom dancing specifically. So people that you might see on Dancing with the Stars. What makes a shoe a ballroom shoe is that it's made with suede soles. So you won't be wearing that on the street. You need to have a wooden surface. Otherwise, you're just ruining it.
Hmm. And can you dance?
No.
Have you tried?
I tried. my wife is a dancer. She's great. She teaches me sometimes, but it doesn't last long because she's so cute. I just can't keep my eyes off of her and hands. So we did a wedding dance, and I just butchered it at my wedding halfway through. I forgot.
So, like, how did you get into the dance world then? Like, how did that come to be?
I landed a job at a shoe store. I worked there for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Then I saw an opportunity to do this on my own, and just kind of went for it without knowing anything.
Interesting. And why did it like light you up? Like, why were you passionate about it? So you just got a job at the shoe store, and then you kind of worked yourself up and you're like, oh, I could do this on my own.
Well, no, it's a lot deeper than that. Of course, nobody wakes up and goes to college and says, I'm going to be a shoe distributor. No, that, that wasn't my dream or my intentions. It, of course, kind of happened, but this is how it happened. As I was finishing college, I was desperate to feel freedom that America sells so well. I wanted to just go out there and feel freedom.
Mm.
So I started doing things, whatever I could get my hands on. Fun things, adventurous things, meeting people, engaging with people. And I accidentally ended up in Oregon with somebody that made me reframe my entire attitude towards life. That experience didn't end very well for me, and I ended up in a depressed state on my mother's couch for almost all of 2011. It was dark. It was very dark. I was close to wrapping it up.
Wow. What do you mean by wrapping it up?
Killing myself.
Wow.
But through providence, through God, through my mother's love, and through my father, actually, I somehow woke up. I woke back up. I remember what happened. My father asked me to recover $1,500 from a FedEx delivery. Mm-hmm. He paid for an overnight thing that they butchered. And their policy is that if we fail a delivery, you can have your money back. And my father asked me to call them. My English was better than his. And take care of it. I took care of it. And he got his money back. And for the first time in quite a while, I felt like a human being capable of something. And that woke up something in me. I wanted to live again. I wanted to feel life. I wanted to explore. It was almost like a phoenix moment. I rose from the ashes of my failures and my debauchery and my mistakes in squandering my life, looking for an adventure. What can I get away with? How can I have fun without paying very, very little? And that's when the shoe business got born. I was desperate for something, and that was the first thing in sight, so I just latched onto it with hunger and tenacity.
Wow, man, that's crazy. How old were you at this point?
22.
And you were born in Russia, right?
That's right, St. Petersburg.
And when did you come to America?
2000. I was 12.
12. How much do you remember from Russia?
Everything.
So what was it like over there?
It was awesome.
And why'd you come here?
Well, my mom.
Yeah.
I have to thank Herbalife. You know Herbalife? It's a MLM nutrition company. They sell cocktails for weight loss, all kinds of pills.
Oh, interesting.
It was a business that was heavily expanding in Russia in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And my mom got in on it. She was a Herbalife distributor. And in her hunger to rack up points, she signed me up to be a distributor. My dad was a distributor. They had these cool little badges, huge badges you just wear on your chest. And it said, lose weight now, ask me how. It's like a huge white pin, black letters, lose weight now.
Yeah.
And then ask me how in red letters. So anyway, my mom racked up enough points and she went to America in either 98 or 99 to Miami to a conference. And she got lit up. She was like, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want. And she got really excited about moving to America. And she started planting the seed of this vision for my father, for myself, for my sister. And America has a thing called green card. Anybody from any country, I think any country, not sure, probably not any country, but certain countries, they have quotas. How many people will America take on through a green card lottery annually? Mm-hmm. And my mom started applying. I think for 2 or 3 years in a row she applied. And finally, in 1999, our name got picked out of the bag.
Wow.
And that's how I ended up in America. Just absolutely luck.
Crazy. Now, what is it like over there in Russia? I mean, is there freedom? Can you kind of do, is it super cold over there? Can you kind of do what you want to do? Or is it kind of like you have to do this job and marry this person? What's the freedom like?
It's relatively free.
Yeah.
I grew up in St. Petersburg, one of the bigger cities. I could do whatever I want. There's definitely upward mobility. There's rules, there's laws. There's no impositions from society, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You're expected to dress well. You're expected to be educated.
Yeah.
To be uneducated in Russia is an embarrassment. So when I came to America, and I went straight to 6th or 7th grade. They were doing stuff that I already did years ago. I was like, I was just coasting.
Yeah.
So everything was easy for me because of the cultural, I don't know what's
norm.
Yeah, cultural norm for education.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, because I feel like America, they have Russia as this like kind of like dark, cold place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, bears, vodka.
Yeah, and
balalaika.
You know, you think of like Putin, this great like leader, communist leader. So it's like, it's almost like so far out there for us, in my opinion, at least.
I understand that, yeah, the media is doing a good job portraying
it. Right. That.
But no, it's a very free and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Within norms. Like we have Subway, we have Pizza Hut.
Right.
We have McDonald's.
Crazy.
Zara. Mm-hmm. like whatever, H&M. Things are pretty developed over there. It's not some backwards village with whips and and shackles.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So, talk to me about this event that you're about to go to. What's that all about?
It's called Nashville Stars. It happens every January. It's run by Andrei and Natalia Parmanovs.
Yeah.
World champions. And this is my life in many ways. Every week somewhere in America, there is an organizer that rents a hotel, lays down the floor, and invites dancers from all over the country to fly in and compete against each other in their selective categories based on age and proficiency levels. People like me, vendors, fly in and we set up our little tables that you'll see tomorrow or whenever the event starts. And we sell stuff. I sell shoes, somebody sells dresses, somebody else sells jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a fascinating ecosystem that unless you're in it, you wouldn't even know that it exists. Yeah. One of my favorite things is to engage with normal hotel guests who suddenly see these Great Gatsby looking people dressed up with hair and makeup and sparkly dresses moving elegantly and beautifully like it's some sort of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what's going on? And then I sneak them into the ballroom and they're like, oh my God.
Right.
Blows their mind. Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely fascinated to see the community. What is the community like? Like, you know, the energy there.
Mm-hmm. Ballroom dancing is, I guess I'll just say it plainly, it's a rich man's hobby. I play video games for my variety and entertainment. I go to the gym for my physical and nourishment. Some people who made right choices in life now get to enjoy the fruits of their labor. Of course, there's people who get into ballroom dancing earlier, but it's tough. You really got to have maybe $2,000 to $5,000 of expendable income a month to have a decent progression in the dance world.
Mm.
This, of course, involves paying for your teacher. Private lessons cost about like $80 to $350 based on the person's proficiency. You got to pay for the shoes, for the dresses, for the flights, for the hotel. It's nuts. That's the beautiful thing about America. If you have gotten to a place where you're good, this is an excellent way to spend your money. It's healthy. It meets all six human needs.
Mm-hmm.
People get certainty, variety, significance, connection, growth, and contribution just from this one activity. It's a little pricey, but so is golf.
Sure. Yeah. Can you give me like the vision of there's going to be dancers. What kind of dances are there? Are there different types of dance? I know it's ballroom, but is there different kind of styles? You know, bring me into this sport.
All right. So the whole thing is called ballroom dance sport.
Yeah.
And generally it's divided into four major categories within my specific niche. They are international Latin, that's five specific dances: cha-cha, rumba, jive, paso doble.
Mm-hmm. Is this kind of like Dancing with the Stars? Just this is the only interpretation that I have to go off of, is watching this, TV show.
I'll try again. You have no idea.
Not really.
All right, so there's four major categories of people dancing.
Mm-hmm.
They are international Latin, international ballroom, smooth, and rhythm. Each one of them has five specific versions of dance.
Right.
So cha-cha, for example, is fast and cheeky. Rumba is slow and sexual. Paso doble is super aggressive. And you, as a dancer, have to show proficiency in each dance. And they're like 90 seconds each back to back with a couple of seconds rest in between. So basically dancers come as a couple, usually a man and a woman. Sometimes they're same sex couples and they show what they're capable of.
Yeah.
In public against other dancers of their caliber.
Mm.
That's what it is. It's basically a battlefield. It's a beautiful battlefield.
It's like a dance battle.
Yeah, you know, like how some birds, they dance to mate. this could be kind of like that. And and those that have the best dance, the best musicality, the best movement, understanding of the dance, understanding of the moves, those are the people that get ahead.
Right. And now, is there people that are like, you're like throwing them up in the air and putting them on your shoulders and stuff like that? Is that part of it, or is it mostly stay on the ground?
Okay, I see what you're talking. You're talking about what's known as cabaret,
maybe,
or theater arts.
Sure.
That does exist as a separate category. It's growing right now. So theater arts and cabaret is kind of a thing where a couple just goes by themselves, and then each couple goes and shows off their entire routine. In the other four that I mentioned, everybody is on the floor at the same time, battling each other like Pokemon. So yeah, theater arts and cabaret is absolutely a category of itself. Yeah, that's a fifth category.
Totally. No, I like the Pokemon analogy. No, that's really good. So tell me about this business. Like, I know you sell shoes. What's so special about your shoes? What's so special about your brand?
It was formed in 1993 by Vladimir Kotlarov. He was a dancer himself. And he, I believe, was frustrated by the quality of shoes on the market, and he decided that he's going to do it his way. So he gathered all the top dancers at the time, Alan Torsberg, Karina Smirnoff, some of them, and he just started making shoes and giving it to them and asking for feedback. They gave him the feedback, he made the adjustments, and eventually the shoes came to life and people started liking them. It became a phenomenon in Russia and in Europe in general. And for whatever reason, it was hard to get it here for the longest time. I don't know what was the big deal. I guess nobody wanted to take it seriously. But one of the reasons for my success is I figured out how to get them in here. And that was basically my claim to fame. Everybody knew Aida when I started, when I was just getting into this. But nobody really knew how to get it. The only way you'd get it, if somebody was flying to Russia, they would go to the store and pick you up a couple of pairs. It was like a treat.
Yeah. Now, how do these shoes make you dance better?
Good question. So they're custom made. That's really the most amazing thing. All of us have different size feet, different width, different length. Some people need things like arch support. Some people need higher heels. Some people need lower. Some people need a wider toe box. Some people need a more narrow one. That's what Aida offers. And that's where my expertise comes in. I travel to these events and help dancers pick out the best possible combination on like a three-dimensional XYZ axis. We're talking height, length, width, a bunch of other parameters. But basically, I help people identify the most optimal shoe for their specific foot, and that's why I'm here. That's why I'm popular and relevant. I figured out a way to help people, and they gladly pay for this.
Yeah.
Do you care how much anything is if it solves all your problems?
Probably not.
Yeah, because what you're getting on the flip side is way more valuable. Yeah. So yeah, that's what makes Aida so special. It's high quality materials and high level of customization and a pretty decent level of service.
Why do you say that? Because it's you?
Yeah, I can rub some people the wrong way.
How so?
Well, the dance world is kind of gilded.
Yeah.
You gotta put on a specific show, a definitive kind of mask to cut through the layers of the complexity of this world. I don't really do that because I know my place. I know who I am. I'm the dude with the shoes, pay or get out. And some people love that. It's a breath of fresh air for them. But many are like, oh, hey, you're not playing along to the thing.
Right.
You forgot to ask me, how am I? Oh, I don't care how you are. What do you need? I'm in the middle of something right now. Oh! Or like, oh, wow, that's great.
Right.
And of course, I've gotten better with this abrasiveness. But in the beginning, 2012, 13, 14, that was kind of like my unfortunate calling card. So half the people immediately didn't like me. And the other half was like fascinated. Who is that guy?
Yeah.
What the fuck is he doing here?
Yeah. Interesting. So are you like the only guy basically in this world that offers what you offer, the shoe that you offer, or do you have like direct competitors that are right next to you?
Yeah, I have direct competitors. They are doing what they're doing, and it's good. Competition is healthy.
Sure.
There's other people that sell Aida for sure, but from what I gather, I'm the biggest mover of it.
You're the guy.
Yeah, some people even think I own Aida. I don't.
That's good.
I'm a distributor. Oh man, it the dance world is really interesting. People love rumors.
Yeah.
Some people a couple of years ago spread a rumor that my daddy took care of it and helped me out and got me into the dance world and hooked it all up for me. And right. I'm just some spoiled rich kid slinging shoes. I love it. I learned so much about myself.
Yeah.
Listening to these things.
Crazy. Where do you see all this going?
Well, I'm going to go to bed soon. Oh, you mean not this podcast? My business?
Yeah, your business. Is this something that you want to do long term, or do you want to, you know, shift paths and go somewhere else, or you also want to make this as big as possible?
Of course, I want everybody to wear Aida, but not every foot matches the brand. Some people actually can't wear it. I help them as much as I can, but my return policy is, if I can't help you, if what I made you sucks, send it back, refund you, no problem. People like that. People like the freedom to walk away. Where do I see this going?
Where do you want it to go? What do you want, Ilya?
I want to clean up and automate as much as possible. I want to travel less. I want to be with my wife. I want to be growing my coaching business, and I want to create opportunities for people to be on the road instead of me, and that this product is a staple of everybody's wardrobe.
Mm.
I want to continue this machine, but I'd like to be less participatory in it because it's taken a pretty big toll on my personal life, and in general, after 12 years, it drains you.
Yeah,
my mission is strong. My mission is to make dancers' dreams come true through high-level service and exquisite quality product. But, you know, eventually everybody gets exhausted.
Yeah. No, I feel... Why is that mission so important to you? That stood out to me.
I love solving problems. I'm passionate about solving problems. Right now, this is related to people's feet. My other business, coaching, is I solve problems of the heart, problems of the mind. I don't really sell shoes. I make dreams come true. What is your dream? A dancer's dream. A dancer's dream is to get to Blackpool, get the first place. Well, unless you have the right tools, it's going to be hard to achieve that dream.
Mm.
So coaching helped me reframe this thinking. Up until 2016, I saw myself as a shoe guy, selling shoes. Just dragging around bags of shoes and hoping somebody buys my shit.
Right.
And I got so sick of it. Mm. I was frustrated and ashamed of what I've done with my life.
Mm.
That's when I started looking for something. I got curious. And I ended up at a Tony Robbins event and linked up with my coach, Keith Wagner. He helped me reframe what I'm doing. I'm not selling shoes. I'm making dancers' dreams come true. I'm the gatekeeper to the next level for these individuals. And when I started seeing it like that, then it became a calling, a duty, something that I could actually get excited about. It excited me. So if I'm going to say anything about this, my vision for this is to find new ways to remain excited.
Mm.
I'm reaching a crescendo where making people's dreams come true is still enough for me to keep going.
Yeah. Dude, I love that. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are in that spot where they're doing something and they kind of feel like there's no purpose there.
It's too familiar.
And that's what you were in, but now you're still doing the same thing, but you found the purpose in it. How can other people do that at home? You know, people listening to this podcast.
There's only really one way. You must check your centeredness. So being principle-centered allows a person to have mobility in any direction. If somebody is money-centered, then everything revolves around the money. If somebody is pleasure-centered, then everything revolves around that. If somebody is self-centered, then everything revolves around self. The only way out of this rigmarole is what's called basically principle-centeredness. So identify what are your principles as an individual. Like one of my principles is be on time. The other one is always be of service. A principle that I'm cultivating right now is how can I make it better? Whatever, anything. Conversation, breakfast for my wife, cleaning of the house, anything, whatever. It's a pretty cool principle because I'm never going to finish it. So a principle has to be, or a mission has to be in such a way that it's unattainable. So selling shoes, that's not a principle. That's just a deliverable, a thing on a to-do list. Now making a person's dream come true, that's kind of a principle. Wow, okay, so what would that take? Who do I have to be? How do I have to show up? How do I have to speak? So whatever you're suffering it with, whoever is listening, if there's something in your life that you find yourself monotonously dragging through and you cringe at the thought of it and you can't wait to go to sleep so that you can get a break from the torment of your endeavors, you must reframe. You got to find a deeper meaning. Of course, we're going to have to go with Viktor Frankl here. There's no reason for him to have survived. But his logotherapy that he developed, finding meaning and reframing in the pause between stimulus and response reaction, that's how he survived. He identified the one thing that couldn't be taken away from him, the meaning that he gives to things. So whatever you're suffering with right now, you got to look at what meaning have you given it by default. And then ask, well, what else could it be? The meaning I've given to myself selling shoes was that I'm a loser. I drag around these shoes and I try to make a couple of dollars and I'm a loser. I'm wasting my life. With coaching, I was able to reframe it. I'm still doing the same thing, but the meaning is completely shifted. I don't hate myself anymore. I'm on a mission. I feel proud. There's a calling. There's a purpose. It's exciting. Exciting in the sense of, ooh, whose dreams am I going to help come true or manifest into reality on this trip?
Yeah. Like,
it's 2024. I started in 2012. This is my fifth time at this event. I don't know who I'm going to meet, but I know I'm going to meet somebody. I know somebody's going to have shoe-related problems or needs, and I'll be there, and we're going to talk, and I'm going to identify their problem, and I'm going to find them a solution, and they're going to smile, and they're going to pay, and they're going to say thank you, and they're going to walk away happy, and they're going to dance, and they're going to achieve dreams and get somewhere. And even if they don't, they're going to feel proud and excited that they tried, and I was part of that. Fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For that, I'll travel.
Wow, that's deep, bro. That is deep. I love it. So where did you captivate this mindset? Obviously, you talked about Tony Robbins and Keith Wagner. And we both know Keith. That's kind of how we met through Undisputed Mastery, one of the events that we met at. Where did that journey start for you?
It started at Keller Williams' office. So when I decided that I'm a loser and I got to get out of here,
yep.
And one of my clients, Louis Fine, great dancer. She was one of the top producers in New Jersey within Keller Williams. And she took me under her wing. She said, come, you're a great salesperson. What are you doing fiddling with these shoes? I'll teach you how to be a real estate agent. I got my license. I started learning. Before Keller Williams, I didn't really even know what it's like. The whole coaching segment was alien to me. I might have heard Tony Robbins here and there on a random ad on YouTube. But I had no idea who that was or what that was all about, or all these other great people like Stephen Covey, Brendan Burchard. I don't know. Name anybody. The book that's here, Gina Wickman. Yeah. Great stuff. So really, Keller Williams studied it for me. And then one day, a Tony Robbins recruiter came in and said, are you tired of your life? Are you tired of the carousel of your uselessness? or something like that. And I remember it was 20 people in the classroom, and everybody's just sitting there flapping their eyelids like, no, I'm good. And I'm like, yeah, I'm tired of my uselessness. So out of the whole class, I was the only one that signed up.
Damn.
And I went to the conference, and I remember I was with his name was Scott, and I told him my story, kind of what I'm sharing right now. Mm-hmm. And he was basically pitching me, and he was trying to understand this coaching for me. I told him my story, and he told me how much I shivered at the cost, and I said, I can't afford it. It's too much. He leaned in real close, and he said, you can't afford not to. And I was like, oh, and I gave him my credit card.
And that's how you met Keith, right?
Well, yeah, after you do this thing,
yeah,
and you pay them, you get a huge questionnaire. And then based on your answers, they I don't know how they do it. They either roll a roulette, or there's some sort of a sequential order who gets who. But I got paired up with Keith, yeah.
That's crazy. For people listening, if they don't know, they're not totally following along to the story. He went to a Tony Robbins seminar, and basically it's an event where 10,000 people or so get together, and Tony Robbins, he's the biggest success coach on the planet, comes in, and basically he just lights your life on fire, asks you some really, really hard questions. You're dancing, you're up and down, you walk on fire. It's just a crazy 3-4 day event. And at the end, they ask you if you want to keep going, either another program or coaching. And that is where Ilya signed up for this coaching program.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's right. And that started my journey into learning about these things. I started reading all kinds of books, like John Eldridge, Wild at Heart, Traction by Gina Wickman, Robert Cialdini, Influence. Right now I'm plowing through Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Mm.
I have so many books in my house.
Yeah.
And I love it so much because I was soaking it up like a greedy baby, like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to be better. And then in 2019, I was asked, well, how much longer? I was like, how much longer what? How much longer are you going to keep it all for yourself?
Mm.
And I was like, oh. It took me about a year to get comfortable with the idea and the paradigm shift that I am somebody who might be useful.
Right.
To the world in terms of coaching. I was very timid. You know, we're all self-conscious and imposter syndrome. Like, who am I to be coaching anybody?
Right. Well, how does the devil attack you or tempt you?
I wonder how you're going to splice this to pivot into that question.
We just go right into it. You got to surprise them. Well,
you won't surprise me. The devil attacks me through arrogance, negligence, and entitlement. I've recently discovered that the vehicle of my manifestation in anything in life is variety. I love variety. I'll go to the gym for 5 days in a row. Mm-hmm. For me, that's variety because I haven't gone to the gym for 5 days in a row ever. But then, it's been 5 days in a row. Let's switch things up with a little bit of vodka. And I'm starting to see these patterns that unless I have checks and balances, unless I have a leash on my variety, I will go in the most unforeseen and unexpected directions. The more ludicrous the deviation, the more fulfilled I am. And that is definitely how the devil attacks me. Facebook ads attack me. the Apple microphone attacks me. Mm-hmm. I say something like iPod stand, and there it is. Oh, I gotta buy it. There, I'm fulfilling my variety. I'm fulfilling my arrogance. Who am I to be buying a $90 swivel iPad stand? Like, I don't need that. But in the moment, because it meets my needs for variety, yeah, I'm buying. Unless I catch myself. Video games, I have probably 80 video games per console, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, Oculus. It's kind of cute, but also super sad. I recently patched them all up into boxes and shoved them into my attic because I finally could see through the pattern, kind of like Neo sees the Matrix.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see it. The video game itself isn't the thing. It's an excellent source for variety. It's an excellent source for unhinged deviation, or rather answering a question, what can I get away with? So yeah, video games, squandering of time, and thinking that I'm better than others. That's how the devil attacks me.
Cool. Can we just make this podcast super interesting and just go all over the place?
Fuck yeah.
Cool, I like
it. It'll satisfy my need for variety.
Exactly, that was the thought. Can you give your wife, can you look into that camera and just give your wife, you know, a little speech on how much you love her, what she means to you, that kind of thing?
Hi, Maria. Thank you so much for breakfast this morning. Knowing how much you love me and how much you care about me makes me wake up every day and keep trying. Every time I come back from these trips and the house is clean and you are excited and you scream my name and I see you smile, I try not to tear up, but I always do. And you give me the strength to keep going because I love you and because you love me. And as long as this bond is pure and alive, I will never stop trying. You are the reason why I'm trying. I want to impress you. I want to make you proud. And I want you to know that with me, you're safe.
I love it.
See you soon, baby.
Beautiful. Beautiful. What do you value most in life out of your health, your faith, money? What do you value most out of those? In what order?
Right now, at this point in my life, I'm going to have to say money.
Really?
Well, yeah, man. My whole life is centered around money for now. But I also understand that this is just an episode, just like a chapter in a book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm for the last decade or so, I've been learning how to make money.
Right.
And now that I've gotten pretty good at it, now I'm looking into faith. Like whenever I'm in town, I go to church. I've never gone to church. In fact, the idea was obnoxious to me for most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Go to church on Sunday morning. What are you, crazy? That's the time to sleep in. I already know everything. Why should I listen to some guy repeat some book forever? Just to read it. Mm-hmm. Why do I have to go and sit there? I don't think like that anymore. Church is like a shower to me now. I go around this dirty world for 6 days, and then I hop in the shower on Sunday morning. Clean my mind, clean my soul, clean my perception, and just relax in the embrace of God.
Yeah.
A reminder that whatever I'm trying to do ain't mine anyway. I'm not going to keep any of it.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a lease. And with that, of course, I'm taking health seriously. Right now, I'm doing 75 hard. Today's day 12. Haven't had alcohol. Been working out twice a day. Going to the bathroom like crazy because you got to drink a gallon of water.
Mm-hmm.
And taking progress pics. So, yeah, that's the order. But
money, faith.
Money, faith, health. But it's shifting. Now it's going to be like a flip side, health, yeah. Faith, money. That will be, I know that this is the next chapter of my life.
How about if we put family in that equation, where would it go?
Health. Like what's coming would be health, family, faith, money. But right now it's money, family, faith, health.
If we change the word from faith to God, would that change anything?
No.
What does your faith mean to you?
I am like kind of like Book of James. I am God's employee, and he has given me a bunch of tools, like a stapler or an Excel spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And he's like, here, go do something with this. No further instructions. That's what faith is to me. Kind of like the five talent man.
Yeah.
God gives us life. We're all imbued with special skills. Like you set up this podcast rig. I'm slinging shoes and coaching. And faith is figure out your gift first and then figure out how to spread it and give it so that others benefit. If I can do that before I die, then I met my requirements before God mm-hmm. as a thank you for life that I was given. And my faith is the belief that this is the relationship. It may sound transactional, but it's not, because God is great. If I choose to be a piece of shit and just consume and take and give back nothing, he'll tolerate that too. And I know that because that's what I did for most of my life.
Right.
So now I'm in cleanup mode, I guess.
Have you read the entire Bible?
Oh, no. I started it and then I just fell asleep in Deuteronomy. And then I just skipped all of it and I started reading the New Testament.
Yeah.
So John I read, Matthew I read, James I read. Right now I'm plowing through Galatians. And definitely want to read Romans. But no, I haven't read the whole Bible. I'd love to.
Nice. No, that's interesting. I just started reading. It's something called the Leadership Bible. I think John Maxwell wrote it. And the way he explains the Bible, it makes it so simple. Mm. It's crazy. I'll show it to you after the podcast. But
yeah, another good one by John Maxwell is David and Goliath.
Mm. Yeah, no, definitely. Cool. What's one thing that breaks your heart the most?
Wasted time. Wasted opportunities. Useless conversations. And it's so ironic because I'm so good at wasting time. That breaks my heart.
Yeah.
When I see somebody wasting time, I get super emotional and passionate and even aggressive. But for me, I'm allowed. That's one of the other ways that the devil gets to me. The double standards of entitlement.
Right.
And that's what I'm working on. Optimization. Not for efficiency purposes, but for fulfillment purposes.
Yeah.
Like scrolling Facebook is not fulfilling at all.
Not at all. What's the one thing that makes your life worth living?
Knowing that I'm doing something good. Knowing that I'm actively putting effort into being a good, principled person. And seeing the fruits of my labor. Seeing my happy wife. Seeing my happy customers. Seeing friends that reach out to me for guidance and advice when they're confused or lost. Knowing that I'm a man that has something to give and something to offer. That makes my life worth living. It would break my heart if I couldn't help somebody when they came to me.
Mm.
To say I don't know is very upsetting to me.
Yeah. All right. Say if you had to drop everything, your business, your coaching business, and this business, you had to drop it all and you had to start over, where would you start?
On Facebook. No, Facebook is amazing. Facebook plugs into every single person's most basic needs. Certainty, variety, significance, connection, love, growth, contribution. I would find niches and groups of people that are interested in whatever subject, and I would start looking for derivatives and access. What's the plural of access? Accessi? Exorcises.
I don't know where you're going with that one, to be honest.
Well, look, if I can identify a pool of people that need something,
right?
Then if I have a pool, I can start sourcing the thing that they might need.
Mm.
That's where I would start. At first and foremost, I would identify a need. If there's no need, there's no point. If you build it, they will come. That's very brave. I'm not into that. I would rather identify a definitive need that is already and then find a way to satisfy it. That's where I would start.
Well, if you did know, what would that need be?
Like,
what need would you solve, so to speak?
Are we talking if I had to start over my shoe business or just everything?
Like, you weren't even allowed to go back to the shoe business or the coaching business. Like, what would you do?
Okay. Wow.
You got to come up with the answer in 10 seconds. You know, garbage man, work at the mall.
I would go into sales.
What kind of sales?
Anything. I have the skills to sell anything at this point because I understand human psychology. Oh boy, here we go. Sell me this pen.
Sell me those AirPods.
Sure. What's your favorite podcast?
The Right Now Show.
The Right Now Show?
Yeah.
Okay, we're really doing this cliche Wolf of Wall Street silliness?
Why not?
The format is simple. I'm not even going to indulge it. Identify a need and sell the need. Don't sell the iPods. Or sell me this pen.
Yeah.
If I was a hot chick and you want my number, I'm only going to give it to you if you can write it down. What are you going to write it down with? Now, this is a little difficult to sell because there's a speaker on your iPhone. However, there's a crying baby on the plane. And you got to listen to this message from your father that is dying. And that baby won't shut up. You want some privacy? You want some noise cancellation? Here you go.
There you go.
Find the need. Make it personal. Take the money.
Now, when it comes to sales, you can't just jam it down their throat. You have to ask them questions. You have to get them to admit for themselves that they need your product, correct?
That's right.
How do you do that? What kind of questions do you ask?
Well, first thing you got to do is you got to vet the individual. There's an awesome acronym called NWAM, Needs, Wants, Wounds, Authority, and Money.
Mm-hmm.
Before I engage with anybody, I try to understand their needs. Somebody comes over to me to buy some shoes. I ask them, what do you want? What do you need? Why are you here? And they start telling me, well, my shoes are falling apart or my shoes hurt me here and there. Nice. Okay, so they need something that doesn't hurt. Do they want it? No, they don't want it. They need it. They're not just window shopping. Wounds. The wounds were revealed. My shoes are hurting me. Great. I have an opportunity to heal the wound. Then I start kind of like gauging them. Hey, these shoes are $250. Is that within your price bracket? Oh, yeah, no problem. Done. They got the money. If I'm talking to a kid and they're like, oh, yeah, I want to try these Adidas. And I ask them, well, what was your mom and dad? Oh, don't worry about it. Here, they gave me their credit card. Okay, we're done with that. But if they don't have it, then of course I find the authority figure.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to these vetting things, I clarify. Like, this is what we're going to do. Then I set the agenda. This is how it's going to go. Then I tell them the features of whatever the product is. Then I close them. I go for some sort of a close tactic. Okay, like here, let's bag it up. This is going to be 2 months for you to get these shoes. It's going to be $250. How would you like to pay? And then when they start budging or whatever, I help them. I help them understand that they need this. That whatever is the cost that's being asked is a lot less than the value that they're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And this entire process is called CATCH. CATCH. It was developed by Ryan Stueman,
mm-hmm.
one of my other mentors and guides. He's an awesome man in Texas, actually. So it's clarify, what are we doing? Agenda, step by step, what's going to happen so that the person knows what they're getting into. Because at this stage, you can ask a simple question like, is that fair?
Right.
And nobody's going to say, no, that's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
we're going to sit down right now. We're going to try on these shoes. If you like them, we will continue. Is that fair? That's not fair. Like, nobody's ever said that. Yeah, that sounds pretty reasonable.
So, I like that.
So you clarify, like, hey, these are shoes. They're the best. These are all the top dancers that wear them. I clarified where they are and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Then I set the agenda. We're going to sit down. We're going to try things on. You're going to tell me if you like it or not. If you like it, you're going to pay and you're going to go. Is that fair? Yeah, that's fair. And then they sit down. That's it. The laws of reciprocity are kicking in. Then I tell them. I tell them everything about the shoes. That's the T in the catch. Then C is close. Sometimes I don't even get to the age, the help part. But yeah, if I can close them on the C, then that's it. It's done.
Yeah, I like that. Is that fair? That's a great line. Because, I mean, it's just so precise.
Yeah.
Now, your personality, it's you can be like sarcastic. You like to joke around a lot. And then you have a serious side to you. And sometimes the sarcasm gets you in trouble at times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that jokester, where does he come from? How did he come to be?
Yeah, the jester. I call him Deadpool or All About Me.
Mm.
He came from childhood, like every saboteur comes from most people, as a defense mechanism.
What's a saboteur?
A saboteur is a shadow that everybody has, something that wants to undermine you and bring you down into the fold, make you average again. My dad is very strict. If I had bad grades, he would make sure that I paid the price for it. And one day, I guess, I said something funny and he forgot to ask me about my grades, so I didn't catch a beating that day. That's when the jester was born. That's when my child brain connected the dots. Ah, make him laugh and they won't hurt you. And over time that mutated and became an abomination of cynicism, sarcasm, and just in general, if I can keep people at bay with humor, they'll never know who I am. And if they don't know who I am, they can't hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
If I hurt them first with an acidic or sarcastic remark, they won't want to be around with me. Perfect. It's like the poo-poo kid. You know about the poo-poo kid?
Not really, no.
Well, there was, I don't know the details of it, but basically there was a child who was sexually abused. And as a defense mechanism, he discovered that if he covers himself in his own feces, then nobody will want to touch him. If he would become so disgusting, then he would be safe.
Mm.
And eventually he got to some psychiatrists and they couldn't figure out, why is this kid covering himself in his own shit all the time? Nobody's hurting him. What's wrong with him? And then through psychotherapy, they discovered that at some point he was sexually abused. And then he covered himself in shit and people were like, ugh. And yeah, that makes sense.
Mm.
So yeah, that's my poo-poo. Sarcastic, cynical, clever, sophisticated humor that just puts people down.
Mm.
I don't do it anymore, not as much, but once in a while.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. Who has been your number one mentor in life?
At this point is Keith Wagner. He really brought me up. His greatest accomplishment is he introduced me to the concepts of celebration and gratitude and God. Before Keith, I had very surface level relationship with God. I only remember God when I needed something.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, definitely Keith is an amazing force in my life. I'm so blessed that I've met him. No idea how or what I did right to get such a gift, but that man cleaned me up nice.
Yeah, he's epic, man. For all of us, his whole tribe. Done so much.
Yeah, he's an example for me.
Yeah, he's an example. He's a leader. He's super intelligent. He has just all the attributes for a great leader. Knows how to ask crazy good questions. Has this this energy about him that, like, when he walks in the room, like, I don't know, you better be on your best behavior kind of stuff, you know what I mean?
His presence invites everybody to step up. That's how I would say.
Yeah. And I don't know if the word is intimidating.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's intimidating, but it's... Yeah, you're right. To step up, for sure.
You'll cut this out.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, talk about the UM tribe and what that has done for you.
About a year ago, I was leading UM tribe, and that was my fifth or sixth event.
Mm-hmm.
I got into UM a while ago in 2018 or 19, back when it was happening in Vegas. And it opened up my eyes that I have the capacity to be a good man. That's what Undisputed Mastery has really done for me. It has given me a chance to be a good person. It's hard for me to remember my first UM, but I definitely remember UM from a year ago when I was assigned to be a fire team leader.
Yeah.
I was given a group of men to lead.
Yeah, I was there.
I didn't really know what I was doing, but Keith believed that I knew what I was doing. And kind of like Morpheus and Neo, when Morpheus told Neo to jump across the rooftops, I probably fell down face into the pavement a couple of times, but eventually I made it over to the other side.
Yeah.
And that was big for me. That was a very powerful graduation event. I don't really know what I'm capable of until I do it. And after I do it, now I suddenly believe. It stopped being theoretical. So UM has opened up my eyes to what I can do. And also it has opened up my eyes to what happens when I disrespect this. So after last year's UM, there was UM training. And that's when my eyes got really opened to this jester persona. And how unless I pay attention to him, he totally comes in and steals the show. And right now I'm working on this interesting phenomena where I'm upgrading and mutating my main character energy to a servant leader energy. So through UM, I'm discovering my sages, my saboteurs, and how to keep the ratio healthy.
What is your coaching style? Like, what exactly do you offer people?
I'm Keith's student.
Yeah.
So I pretty much offer a version of what Keith does and his methodologies.
Mm-hmm.
We identify where a person is in the basic eight categories of their life: health, relationships, meaning, finances, work, legacy, spirituality, time management. And then we just work on it. I'm kind of like a second pair of eyes for an individual. So whatever a person is dealing with, we dive deep, we differentiate it, take a derivative of what is happening, why it's happening. I help people understand the modalities of their behavior, what are some blind spots that they have. I help them understand what are the limiting beliefs that are sustaining their perpetual suffering. And if the person sees it, we do homework around the subject. We start reading books about the subject. So basically I guide people in areas where they would not venture themselves.
Mm. What kind of results have you gotten?
Oh, one of my clients is in the middle of writing a book. Another one moved to California from New Jersey. Now lives with his girlfriend. Some have expanded their jiu-jitsu academies.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot to do with relationships.
Yeah.
For some reason I gravitate towards men because for some reason, I don't know why, a lot of modern men, like just a little bit younger than me, I'm 36, they skipped the chapters where they were supposed to be good men. I don't know what happened. I skipped that chapter myself too somehow.
Mm.
Oh, it was given to me, definitely. My dad raised me very well, but maybe I was sleeping or something. But until Keith came into my life, I was living a what can I get away with life.
Yeah.
Now I'm living a how can I make it better life, or at least trying to.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, explain that. I guess you're talking from a boy to a man, right? What's the difference there? Like how does one transfer to being a boy to a man?
Sure. A boy's priority is what can I get and how much can I score without getting in trouble.
So more pleasure focused.
Right. Pleasure centered, entertainment centered, indulgence centered.
Mm-hmm.
A man's centeredness is around contribution, usefulness, capability, and
purpose. Yeah. Mission.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And why would anybody go in that realm? Well, the truth is the boyish life is finite. Eventually, I'm going to run out of things to indulge in. And that is a terrible moment. Because then you look back and a whole life has gone by in hedonistic pursuits of nonsense.
Leaves you empty.
Sure, that's right. Consumption leaves nothing except a pile of shit. Now, cooking also leaves a pile of shit, but at least you fed a whole bunch of people.
I think we're going to end right there. That's the ender. Thanks for listening, guys. Ilya, pronounce your last name again. Call?
Us.
Us. Off?
Call us off.
Call us off. All right, we're calling us off right now is what we're doing.